The podcast today is about trauma-informed practice and how you can apply it to your legal practice to help clients going through the legal system. With me today, I have Jackie Hall and Meredith Gray. Jackie is a social worker in our domestic violence unit, and Meredith is a senior solicitor in the unit as well.
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
So to start things off, Jackie, can you talk a little bit about what is trauma?
Trauma is any type of experience that overwhelms our ability to cope and often makes us feel helpless. For example, being in a car accident, a concerning health diagnosis, or feeling unsafe in the world, the way that those who experience domestic and family violence often feel. Despite being physically safe, it can take a long time to work through the psychological impacts of trauma. Many trauma survivors live in fear, and this can impact the way they interact with people, even those who are providing assistance and support.
And Meredith, as a lawyer, can you talk us through how going to court can impact on a client who's experiencing domestic and family violence?
It can impact in a lot of ways. So firstly, having to see or hear or be in the presence of the perpetrator at court, being asked to talk about the violent incidents over and over, feeling uncertain about the future while they wait for a court outcome, which can be for many years in a lot of our jurisdictions, feeling unheard through most of the process, and facing judgment and disbelief of their story.
So Jackie, what is trauma-informed practice?
It's about helping clients feel safe, building trust, and showing respect. You don't need clinical expertise or specialist training to be trauma-informed. You just need to know the basic principles. And there are five key principles to trauma-informed practice. They are safety, trustworthiness, choice, empowerment, and collaboration.
And Meredith, what does that mean for lawyers?
Well, it means looking at what's happened to your client rather than what's wrong with them and avoiding pathologizing your client. It also means being sensitive to and informed about trauma and approaching our interactions with our clients with that in mind. And most importantly, it means working to empower our clients through the legal process so that they feel like they're participating in their legal journey rather than having it imposed upon them.
And what have you found to be the benefits of trauma-informed practice for both lawyers and for clients?
Oh, it's great for everyone. So for our clients, for us, for the court, it really helps our clients to feel respected and heard. It will help them to keep calm and coherent when giving us instructions and when giving evidence at court. Our interactions with them become easier, and it helps our clients to process maybe difficult news or advice better, and the potential for re-traumatizing them is minimized. On the flip side, if we're not using a trauma-informed framework, that power imbalance in the lawyer-client relationship can really easily trigger trauma responses in some of our clients.
So what is a trauma response and what does it look like? How can we tell if our client is presenting with trauma?
You can usually see it in the fight, flight, or freeze response, which happens when their rational brain goes offline. The fight or flight response, otherwise known as hyperarousal, may be noticeable if your client is fidgeting, having trouble understanding and taking in information, having disorganized thinking, not sounding logical or rational, continually asking the same question or becoming obsessive about a topic, yelling or talking quickly, constantly scanning for danger, or only seeing the negative. For other clients, they can demonstrate the freeze response or hypoarousal, and you can identify this in your clients if you see that they are sticking their head in the sand, not taking calls, not coming to appointments or court, not making eye contact when you talk to them, agreeing with everything you say, physically shrinking into themselves, not answering your questions, presenting like they lack emotion or feeling, not taking in information, seeming disconnected or spaced out, or appearing or speaking in a childlike way. Clients who present like this will need support to regulate their nervous system.
So Jackie, how can lawyers offer that kind of support to clients?
The best way is to draw on those five key principles of trauma-informed practice: safety, trustworthiness, choice, empowerment, and collaboration.
Meredith, what are some of the ways that lawyers can apply the principle of safety to their practice?
So safety doesn't just mean physical safety. It also means creating a physically and psychologically safe space for them to feel comfortable when they're working with you. So at the first contact point, for example, it's important to ask the client how to safely contact them. And this will show them from the outset that their safety is really important to you. Then before setting up that first conference with the client, you can set up your room in a really trauma-informed way. And this can be really simple things like having tissues available on the table, having water or mints. Actually drinking or sucking on something helps regulate breathing and soothes the vagus nerve in the throat, which can reduce anxiety in your client. So that's really helpful. Ideally, you would choose a room that has some natural light, have plants available in the room if you can, have the option of soft furnishing if you can too, like armchairs or a couch. That's even more important if we're seeing children. And keep the room uncluttered, which I know can be really difficult for us lawyers if you're seeing the client in your office, but too much visual stimulus can really heighten anxiety in a client who's traumatized. And then when you bring the client into the room, show them the exits. That might sound silly to some of you, but for people with trauma, particularly from domestic and family violence, they often need to know where they can escape to. Then sit your client so that they can look out the window. It helps them to regulate their emotions. And try to sit diagonally from your client instead of directly in front of them, because that can be confronting. Then if you do see them get one of those trauma reactions that Jackie talked about, tell them you've noticed and give them a little break.
And what about at the end of your meeting?
I would say don't let your client leave if they're distressed. Don't let them leave crying. Spend some time bringing the meeting to an end. Have a bit of banal chit chat with them. You know, how are you getting home? What's for dinner? Center their thoughts back on an everyday topic. And all of those things can really help to create a safer space for your clients so that they can open up to you in a more genuine and safe way and give you much better instructions.
And Jackie, you do a lot of work with victims of domestic and family violence in the family law courts. How do you go about creating safety for clients going to court?
Preparation is really important. The more information you can give the client beforehand about what to expect, the better. It helps them to feel safe in the lead up to the day. So you can do things like draw a diagram of what the courtroom setup will be, where everyone sits, who speaks when, who else will be in the room. All these things might seem obvious to lawyers, but they aren't to someone who has never been to court. It could also be helpful to invite them to visit court before their first date so they can get a sense of the space and link in with support services available at the court. And when you're at court, check in with your client, offer breaks, sit them by a window if they're not in a safe room, and keep them informed about what is happening. There's also a simple grounding technique that you can do with clients who get overwhelmed. So you ask them to sit comfortably and focus on their breathing. And then you ask them to name five things that they can hear, five things that they can see, and five things that they can feel. And you don't want to rush them while they're doing this. You want to encourage them to connect to the present moment, as this will help them feel calmer, safer, and have a clearer mindset.
So the next principle is trustworthiness. Meredith, how can lawyers build trust better with their clients?
Pretty simply by doing what you say you're going to do. Don't make promises you can't keep to the client. I always try to overestimate the time that it'll take me to do something. I know we're all busy, but for a client with trauma, waiting for something that's overdue can be really distressing for them. By the same token, call a client at the time you say you will. Don't leave them waiting in a meeting room if you say you're going to meet them at a particular time. This will really heighten their trauma response and create distrust from the outset. I think also be transparent and honest with your client. really explain what legal privilege means and explain to them from the outset what your duties to the court are. Don't be judgmental about your client's experiences, and don't be judgmental about her choices in her own life or in the legal process. And finally, wherever possible, maintain consistency in who represents a client. So that means if you're sending another lawyer from your office or an agent to court, try to use the same person each time. That will minimize the different people that your client has to meet and minimize the times they have to tell their story.
Jackie, the third principle is about choice. What does that look like in practice?
Some victims of domestic and family violence often find it difficult to make decisions because they haven't been allowed to for so long. Some victims go the opposite way and can seem controlling and demanding because all of a sudden they do have the freedom of choice. So we're always looking at ways to give clients a choice, even if it's just around appointment day and time, or for the more important legal questions, laying out their options and empowering them to make the choice.
And the fourth principle is empowerment. Meredith, what are some practical ways that lawyers can apply empowerment for their clients?
Well, I tend to explain to my clients upfront that my role is to achieve their legal goals. I'm firm in putting my client at the centre of the process. And then during interviews, I ask them to repeat what they've understood. I reassure them that it's my job to make sure that they understand the legal process that they're going through.
The last key principle of trauma-informed practice is collaboration. Jackie, can you explain how collaboration can benefit clients and how lawyers can collaborate better?
Collaboration kind of ties in with the concept of empowerment. Basically, by collaborating with the client, they feel part of the legal process. Collaboration also minimises the number of times your client has to tell their story. And lawyers can collaborate better by working with client's support worker or any other person who is working with the client so that everyone's on the same page.
And Meredith, what are some ways that lawyers can get instructions about domestic and family violence from their clients in a more trauma-informed way?
I'd say allow enough time in your conference for your client to actually tell their story. And if you can, schedule in more than one conference, particularly if you're getting instructions about a lengthy document like an affidavit or a statement. You should also bear in mind that it's normal for clients to not disclose domestic and family violence in their first interview with you. Usually it's their second or third, and for sexual assault, it can take much longer than that. Sometimes the clients will choose not to disclose to you, and you should be respecting that choice as well. I'd also say that when getting instructions, start with basic questions like, do you feel safe at home, or what do arguments look like between you, before moving on to the more closed questions, and give them an opportunity to tell their story in their own words and use their words in their statement or affidavit.
And Jackie, what suggestions do you have?
Keep in mind that asking detailed examples of the violence can be triggering. So look for the fight, flight, and freeze signs. Consider pausing the detailed focus on the conversation and acknowledge their strengths. For example, this can be a really hard process. I admire your strength in sharing this difficult information with me, and this will be really helpful for your case. And also being mindful of your language. Questions like, why did you stay for so long, feel judgmental to the client and will not support in building rapport. If you need the answer to a question like that, consider asking something like, it must have taken great strength for you to live in that environment for so long. How were you able to leave?
On the topic of language, I'd also add that when the client starts to share their story with you, it's so important to acknowledge what they've said. So the worst thing you can do is just be silent or ignore what they've said. Don't move straight to your next question on your list, which we quite often do as lawyers. Be human in that moment and empathize with your client. It can be really hard for us to do that sometimes when we're feeling rushed or under pressure, but it will build rapport and trust with your client really effectively.
And finally, where can lawyers refer clients who have experienced or maybe using domestic and family violence for support?
For survivors, if it's a family law matter, there's the social support workers at family court registries for anyone, whether they're privately represented, on a grant of aid, or self-represented. The Family Advocacy Support Service for Women phone number is 1-800-113-2277. And the Family Advocacy Support Service number for men is 1-300-113-2277. There's also 1-800 RESPECT, which is 1-800-737-732. There's the Domestic Violence Line, which is 1-800-656463. And the local Women's Domestic Violence Court Advocacy Service, which is 1-800-938-227.
And I'll add, for perpetrators or defendants that you're representing, if they have a family law issue, like Jackie said, we can refer them to the Family Advocacy and Support Service social support workers at the Family Court Registry. And Jackie's given you the numbers for the male and female services. If your client doesn't identify as a particular gender, they can identify which service they want to work with. There's also Relationships Australia. They provide programs for men who use violence to teach about emotional regulation and control, and they run programs across New South Wales. Their number is 1300 364 277. There's also the Men's Referral Service on 1300 766 491 and Men's Line Australia, which is 1300 789 978. And if you're working with female defendants who have experienced violence themselves, the Women's Domestic Violence Court Advocacy Service, again, was 1800 938 227.
Thanks, Meredith and Jackie, for sharing your very useful insights today about trauma-informed practice.
You're welcome.
Thank you.